Welcome to the podcast of Hemisphere, the official journal of the European Hematology Association. Hemisphere's podcast presents insightful, expert discussions about recent hematology publications. We hope you enjoy.
Welcome to this episode of the Hemisphere podcast. My name is Stephen Hibbs, and I'm a hematologist and clinical research fellow based at Queen Mary University of London, and I'm one of the scientific editors for Hemisphere. In today's episode, we will be discussing a common but challenging set of clinical scenarios. What do you do when a patient with cancer and low platelets also has an indication for antithrombotic drugs? They might have had venous or arterial thrombosis, or you might be considering treating them prophylactically. How do you balance the risk profiles of different medications, different severities of thrombocytopenia, and different indications for treatment? I'm very pleased that we have Professor Anna Falanga to speak to this subject today. Anna is first author on the 2022 EHA guideline on management of antithrombotic treatments in thrombocytopenic patients with cancer. Anna is Professor of Hematology at the University of Milano Bicocca and works clinically at the Hospital Papa Giovanni XXIII in Bergamo. Anna, could you start by telling us how you first became interested in this subject?
Yes, thank you. I'm very pleased to be here with you and share some of the thoughts that we had when we were just preparing these guidelines. I have been involved in the field of cancer and thrombosis for a long time. And as you have said, the cancer patients are at high risk of both arterial and venous thrombosis, but they also suffer of atrial fibrillation with aging and everything. So there are several circumstances in which we need to administer anticoagulation or antiplatelet agents to these patients. But there are several factors that render difficult these treatments in cancer patients. And thrombocytopenia is one of these factors, is a very well-known limiting factor for administering anticoagulation in general. But it can commonly occur in patients with cancer due to the bone marrow infiltration by the cancer cells, or also to the anti-cancer treatments, high-dose chemotherapy, and all these kind of things. So thrombocytopenia is a strong factor for bleeding during anticoagulation or antiplatelet therapy. And different strategies that must be undertaken to be able to provide, in a sense, a protection against thrombosis to these patients without causing hemorrhage. So this is a very, very challenging situation. We have to carefully balance the risk of bleeding against the risk of thrombosis. So there is, however, a very little evidence-based, if any, to help in this decision, and therefore it needs much attention. And this is why we started this challenged me as well as the other clinicians.
So the timing of this guideline that you published last year, what would you say have been the most important findings or changes or new evidence in the years leading up to making this guideline?
Well, actually, the challenge was just the lack of evidence-based data. And nothing particularly special has been coming out in the last years about that. The only things that appears very clear from the recent literature is the great heterogeneity of the approach of clinicians in managing patients with severe thrombocytopenia and acute thrombosis or in need of an acute treatment with antithrombotic drugs. The scenario is very varied, very diverse. And for this reason, we, the EHA, the European Hematology Association, in collaboration with the European Society of Cardiology, decided to produce this consensus guideline, because it cannot be called an evidence-based guideline. It's a consensus guideline to help a clinician in the decision-making of these patients. We have learned and is a real need for the clinical practice.
That kind of topic of a consensus guideline, and I guess that being quite a different thing in some ways than a sort of fully just working from lots of trial data type guideline, what was the process like? And in particular, I'm interested to know if there were any areas where it was really hard to find consensus between the different members of the guideline writing group. Were there any parts of it where there were just so strong different views that it was hard to know how to come to consensus? And how did you approach that?
Well, these guidelines focus on adult patients with cancer and the clear indication for anticoagulation or for antiplatelet or single or dual antiplatelet therapy or a combination. So with the concurrent thrombocytopenia. And this is per se an extremely challenging situation. So in my practice, the most challenging scenario since I am a hematologist is the patients with acute leukemia or other hematological malignancy under treatment with high dose chemotherapy who experience an acute thrombotic episode like pulmonary embolism or acute myocardial infarction or stroke. This is, in any case, extremely challenging. So we are just on the cutting edge of this problem. I cannot say that one scenario is worse than the other. This consensus guideline focuses exactly on the worst scenario we can have. And this is particularly difficult when the platelet drop below 50,000, and then even lower than that, below 20,000. At that time, you have clearly to stop any treatment, and this reducing the dose or stop the antithrombotic therapy is a very, very hard decision.
So how does a guideline like this get written? What happens in terms of the consensus discussion? What does that look like? How do you go about that?
As you can imagine, the debate has been often very heated in the several circumstances, given the scarcity of evidence-based data on which to base our recommendations. So we used the Delphi procedure, which is the panel of experts was engaged in several rounds and questions about how to make the decision, and their responses were then aggregated and shared with the group after the round until the consensus was achieved. So this is the method that was utilized, because you can imagine that very often we had difficulties in finding an agreement.
I'm kind of struck by how complex this area is for us as clinicians and how difficult we find it to come to understand what to do. And so I'm wondering what it would feel like to a patient when you're trying to explain to them the risks and the benefits and how you've weighed these things up. Do you have any kind of advice about how you approach these sort of discussions with patients to make really complicated sort of risk-benefit discussions understandable to the patients that you're treating?
Yeah, this is a very important question, because the most challenging time is when you have to communicate the patient, the circumstances. I would start with this, explaining the patients the role, the job that the platelet do in normal conditions. And the way they stop, very simply, that the way they stop the blood loss in our body. And then, of course, say that having a small number of platelets, of course, renders this situation at high risk of bleeding. And at the same time, they are already at risk of bleeding because they are taking an antithrombotic drugs, and they know that is already risk of bleeding situation. So the two things together are very, very difficult to manage. And this is why we have to try to find some strategies to help him or her to combat thrombosis without worsening the bleeding possibility.
Yeah, I can imagine that in practice it's very hard, isn't it, to kind of, with everything kind of being different. But I guess that's it. We have to share that uncertainty with them to say this is not simple. That's part of the
At this point, we don't know. There are two very difficult situation together and probably understanding why the background, what is the background behind this, the difficulties can help understand also the final decision that we have to share together.
So from the sort of situation we're in now, where there's these big gaps in the evidence base for this topic, I'd like to ask you if you could have as much money as you wanted, as many researchers as you wanted, access to any patient report you wanted, what would be your dream study that would answer sort of the most important uncertainty here?
Yeah, I think that the clinical studies in this field are highly needed. Many studies are needed. I would start for my personal background with the issue of cancer patients with severe thrombocytopenia, grade 3 or 4, and acute venous thromboembolism. I would start from that because for me, a clinical trial assessing the proper anticoagulation dose reduction as compared to full dose, and also assessing the efficacy of platelet transfusion would be very urgent and also very helpful for clinical practice because it could provide information that can be extrapolated for decision also in other acute situations. So probably I would give the preference to this type of trial as first. So of course, for doing this type of trials, so an international collaboration is crucial to achieve the goal.
Brilliant. I really hope that you get to do it. That sounds like a crucial study. So if I can ask you, is there any kind of final take-home message that you'd want to give to clinicians who are dealing with this sort of situation today?
The things that I think are things that are simple, but sometimes it's not easy to remember. But the first thing to do from a hemostasis point of view, coagulation point of view, is to assess the indication, to reassess the indication to the antithrombotic therapy, because sometimes the therapy is not necessary anymore. We can stop it, and so the problem is resolved. We have to reassess the risk of thrombosis and the risk of bleeding of the single patient, of course, and also anticipate the duration of the severe thrombocytopenia to make a clear plan for the management of the antithrombotic treatment. And finally, I would say, do not forget to restart antithrombotic therapy once the platelet go back to at least above 50,000. But please don't forget to restart antithrombotic therapy.
This
would be the things that I would suggest first.
Yeah, that's really useful. There's all the complex stuff that we don't have enough trials for and so on, but there's actually the simple stuff that it's just really hard to remember when there's so much other stuff going on for our patients. So thank you so much, Anna, for speaking.
Thank you. Lovely. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. And thank you to everyone listening to this podcast. So you can learn more from this guideline on the Hemosphere site. And please feel free to suggest other topics or articles you'd like us to explore on future episodes of this podcast.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Hemosphere podcast. All of Hemosphere's content is open access and can be found at www.hemospherejournal.com. We hope you will join us for future podcast episodes.